There are some hauntings that are so creepy, so bizarre, they will literally send a chill down your spine. Stories where witnesses insist an ordinary object becomes something else entirely. Something seems to move on its own, manipulate the people around it, and leave behind a trail of fear and death wherever it goes. That leads us to one of the most infamous paranormal cases in history, Annabelle. For decades, the seemingly innocent-looking doll has been at the center of terrifying claims involving unexplained attacks, violent paranormal activity, and encounters that have convinced paranormal investigators and authorities that something dark may be attached to this doll. You'll hear, the thing with this haunting is there are so many witnesses. Tonight, we're going to explore the story behind the world's most notorious, allegedly haunted doll. And at the end of the episode, I have another similar case I want to share with you that I stumbled upon. This is going to be a very eerie episode, so dim the lights, get comfy. This is the haunting of Annabelle. Our story begins with a 28-year-old woman named Donna, who lived in Hartford, Connecticut. In 1970, Donna was a nursing student preparing to graduate. All was good in Donna's life, until her birthday. That year, Donna's mother gave her a Raggedy Ann doll. This doll was an antique. Her mom had found it at a secondhand store. She was just pulled to it, thinking this will be a great present. At the time, Donna shared an apartment with her roommate, Angie, and after this, she brought the Raggedy Ann doll back to their place and kept the doll on her bed as decoration, thinking it was a cute gift from her mom and didn't give it much thought. But in the following days, Donna and Angie began to notice something very strange and unsettling about the doll. They said they began to find it in places and positions that they had not left it in. The movements started out small, finding the doll with its legs crossed or its arms folded. Other times it would be found sitting upright when it wasn't left in that position. Then the movements got more noticeable. At certain times, finding the doll in a completely different room than where it was left. Donna saying on a few occasions, she would leave the doll sitting on the couch in the family room, only to come home later in the day and find the doll on her bed behind her closed bedroom door. They start talking to each other like, did you move the doll? And the other one's like, no, I didn't. So what, like the doll is moving on its own? That would be impossible, right? And began discussing the doll and how strange this was with friends. And their friend Lou was especially weirded out. He had been there since the doll was first brought into the apartment, and he was creeped out from day one, telling Donna to get rid of it, saying he just had a bad feeling about it. And it was about to get stranger. A month later, the women began to find notes left around the apartment. Pieces of ripped up parchment paper all around. These notes read, help, help us, and help Lou. These were written in what appeared to be child's handwriting. And even more mysterious, the women said they didn't keep any of that kind of parchment paper in their apartment. So where did it come from? All of this was just unexplainable. One night, Donna came home to find that the doll had moved again and was on her bed. This was becoming more standard, but this time something felt off. Donna was horrified to see a red liquid substance on the doll's body and hands. This looked like blood. This really scared the women, and unsure what to do, they contacted a medium. This medium came over to the apartment and conducted a séance. And during this, Donna was introduced to a spirit who said her name was Annabelle Higgins. Through the medium, story was that Annabelle was a 7-year-old girl who lived on the property before the apartments were built. The spirit describing these as happy times. Little Annabelle died or was killed, but said her body was found on the field where the apartment building now stood. The medium claimed that Annabelle's spirit wanted to stay because Donna and Angie made her feel welcome and loved. Annabelle's spirit supposedly saying she felt very comfortable with the women. After hearing this, Donna reportedly felt sad for the spirit and gave it permission to live inside the doll, even taking it a step further and telling the spirit that she could stay with them and live in the apartment. And from then on, everyone started to refer to the doll as Annabelle. After the seance, Donna told Lou about Annabelle, telling him that the doll was haunted, but just by the young spirit of a girl. She seemed harmless and just wanted to live with the women. But Lou was not convinced that the spirit was a good one. He told her that he felt it was evil and questioned the spirit's intentions. While at the apartment, pointing at the doll saying, "Get rid of it." Shortly after this, Lou said he woke up from a nightmare, feeling the sensation of paralysis, his body unable to move. When he opened up his eyes, he looked down at his legs and saw Annabelle, who began crawling up his body to his chest, and then the doll began to strangle him. Eventually, Lou passed out. When he woke up hours later the next morning, he wholeheartedly believed this encounter had happened, saying it was not a dream. The next day, Lou and Angie were supposed to set out for a road trip. Lou, very excited to be getting away from Annabelle for a while. That day, Lou was at the apartment, getting their things together and looking over road maps with Angie, when they heard a strange sound coming from Donna's room. Donna had left for the day. She wasn't there, but it sounded like someone was moving around in her bedroom, a shuffling sound. They walked over, opened up the door, and were surprised to find no one inside. Lou walked into her room, certain from that the noise they heard, he was going to find an intruder inside, when suddenly he began to double over in pain. His stomach area was burning, blood soaking through his shirt. He looked and saw bloody claw scratches in the mark of the beast down his chest and stomach. Strangely, within a few days, Lou said the marks began to fade away. But Donna finally began to question the spirit's intentions. After the attack on Lou, Donna reached out to an Episcopal priest named Father Hegan. She told him all about Annabelle and what was going on in the apartment. From here, he believed they needed help. He contacted a higher-ranking priest named Father Cook, who got information on the case and immediately contacted Ed and Lorraine Warren. Ed and Lorraine started the New England Society for Psychic Research in 1952. They were New England's paranormal research headquarters. The Warrens investigated and documented paranormal and psychic activity around the world for over 50 years. Authorities and religious officials would frequently reach out to the Warrens for help with cases of violent demonic paranormal activity, extreme cases where people were attacked, priests became possessed. They began their investigation into Annabelle, interviewing Donna, Angie, and Lou. And very early on, the Warrens said they did not believe that the doll was possessed. The Warrens said that spirits do not possess objects like houses or toys. They possess people. And an inhuman spirit can attach itself to a place or object. And this is what was happening with Annabelle. They believed that Annabelle was being manipulated by a demonic spirit, creating the illusion of it being alive in order to get recognition, saying it had no intention of staying attached to the doll. Hauntingly, they believed it was using the doll to search for a human host, meaning this entity was not the ghost of an innocent little girl, rather a demon imitating a little girl. The Warrens said, quote, "The spirit, or in this case, an inhuman demonic spirit, was essentially in the infestation stage of the phenomenon. It first began moving the doll around the apartment by means of teleportation to arouse the occupant's curiosity in hopes that they would give it recognition. Then, predictably, the mistake of bringing a medium into the apartment to communicate with it, the inhuman spirit, now able to communicate through the medium, preyed on the girl's emotional vulnerabilities by pretending to be a rather harmless, lost young girl, with which, during the seance, was allowed permission from Donna to haunt the apartment. It then set out causing negative phenomenon to occur. It aroused fear through the weird movements of that doll. It brought about the materialization of the disturbing handwritten notes, the symbolic drops of blood on the doll, and ultimately it even attacked Lou, leaving behind the symbolic mark of the beast. The next stage of the infestation phenomenon would have been complete human possession. Had these experiences lasted another 2 or 3 more weeks, the spirit would have completely possessed, if not harmed or killed, one or all of the occupants in the house. End quote. Now, how scary is that? Every move was planned out by this demonic entity, preying on the women's emotions, getting them to feel sorry for it. Every moment since Donna brought the doll home was so carefully calculated. Everyone continued referring to the doll by the name Annabelle, even though the Warrens did not believe that this was the demonic spirit's name. After this, Donna asked the Warrens to remove Annabelle from the apartment. Next, the Warrens had a priest perform an exorcist blessing on Donna and Angie's apartment. Father Cook was reportedly uncomfortable with his role as an exorcist, but agreed to perform the 7-page rite of exorcism. He recited this through Donna and Angie's apartment, making sure the entity was no longer there. Ed and Lorraine left with Annabelle, and on the ride home, the Warrens said they put Annabelle in the back seat and decided to not take the highway home as they were concerned that the demonic spirit was still attached to the doll. Not long into their ride, the car began swerving and stalling around every turn. There were countless near collisions. The brakes and power steering would fail. Ed said he frantically grabbed holy water out of his bag, doused the doll, and made the sign of the cross over it, which allowed them to get home safely. Once back at the Warrens, they experienced the same things that Donna and Angie described. They would find Annabelle in different rooms, different positions. It seemed to be moving throughout the house on its own. On one occasion, the Warrens witnessed the doll levitate out of a chair in Ed's office. Another time, the Warrens left to go out of town and when leaving, locked Annabelle in the outer office building. When they returned, they found the doll comfortably sitting on Ed's easy chair in an upstairs bedroom. One day, the Warrens asked a Catholic exorcist named Father Jason Bradford over to their home to help with the Annabelle situation. During the visit, Father Jason walked over to Annabelle, picked the doll up off the chair, and said, "You're just a rag doll, Annabelle. You can't hurt anyone." Then threw the doll back onto the chair. Ed told him that he shouldn't say that. Lorraine was concerned for Father Jason's well-being and asked him to drive carefully and let them know when he got back home. Lorraine saying that she sensed that something bad was going to happen, but he had to be on his way. He agreed to notify them when he got back home and left the Warrens. 1 hour passed, then 2. Finally, 3 hours later, the phone rings. The Warrens quickly answer. On the other end of the phone was Father Jason. He told them that he had been in a horrible car accident. Father Jason said that as he was driving home from their house, his brakes went out as he was driving through a busy intersection, and his car was totaled. Over time, the Warrens felt it was safest if Annabelle did not have contact with anyone. It was at that point they put her in a locked case. All the wood from the box was soaked in holy water, made especially for Annabelle. The case is regularly blessed by religious officials, and it's kept in the Warrens' infamous occult museum. There's a sign on the front that says, "Warning, positively do not open." So, you would think that would be the end of it, right? But it wasn't. One visitor to the Warrens' home reportedly walked up to Annabelle's case and began tapping on it, all the while taunting the doll, apparently asking the doll to prove it was haunted by leaving scratch marks on him. Ed heard this and promptly asked the man to leave. So, he did. This man and his girlfriend got on their motorcycle and left. Later on, this girlfriend reached out to Lorraine and told her that on that ride home, she and this man were laughing, making jokes about Annabelle, when out of nowhere, suddenly, He lost all control of the motorcycle, they crashed into a tree, and it killed the man. The girlfriend survived the accident, but was hospitalized for over a year. Did Annabelle cause this fatal accident? Although Ed Warren has since passed away, while he was alive, he warned against challenging the dead and demonic spirits. The Warrens investigated a number of hauntings, including the Perrin family haunting, Amityville, but there's been a particular fascination with Annabelle. In the Annabelle movies, they made the doll look different. It's not a Raggedy Ann-style doll, but more lifelike. And I don't know if they needed to change that for the film, because the actual Raggedy Ann doll is creepy enough. While Lorraine Warren was still alive, she gave a video tour of the museum and said she didn't even like to look at Annabelle in the eyes. The doll really scared her, and it's spooky looking. Earlier this year, the legend of Annabelle took yet another disturbing turn and was in the headlines again. Paranormal investigator Dan Rivera died suddenly while on tour with the infamous doll. During a stop in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, his unexpected passing immediately fueled rumors online, with many wondering if Annabelle herself had somehow been involved. However, after an investigation, the Adams County coroner determined Rivera's death was the result of natural causes. Officials say he suffered a cardiac-related event and noted that he had a documented history of heart problems. They also emphasized that no foul play was suspected and that Annabelle was not in the room at the time of his death. So officially, there is no evidence linking the doll to his passing. But for many believers, the timing of his death while traveling on a tour centered around one of the most infamous, allegedly haunted objects in the world has only deepened the mystery surrounding Annabelle. Whether it was just simply a tragic coincidence or another chapter in the doll's terrifying legend is something people continue to debate. And there's another haunting similar to Annabelle's that is a little lesser known, and that is Norman, the haunted doll. In 2016, a man named Stephen Lancaster and his fiancée Christina Parker were out shopping at an antique store in Wallace, North Carolina. The couple loved to collect old artifacts and would regularly spend the weekends at resale shops, secondhand stores, and estate sales. Many people really enjoy antiquing. Some people enjoy looking for furniture, others vintage clothing, and Stephen's fiancée Christina really enjoyed finding unique dolls. One day, they were walking around when they came upon a strange wooden box. It looked like it could be locked, and the couple was curious as to what was inside. Stephen pulled it from the shelf and opened it up to find a strange vintage-style doll. Stephen said the doll was cute and ugly at the same time, and Christina said she wanted to buy it. But given it was hidden away in this wooden box with a lock on the outside of it, Stephen wasn't quite sure if it was even for sale, or if the ladies working even knew it was at the shop. Surprisingly, as soon as the couple walked up to the register, the women directly looked at the wooden box and became visibly uncomfortable. Stephen said he asked the women about the doll and if it was for sale, as he was wanting to purchase it. And he said the women became very dodgy. He was insistent and said, "Can I buy this?" There was a long, awkward silence. Finally, one of the women began to share more information about how the store got the doll and how she believed that wherever this doll would go, sadness would follow. She said in the 1960s, a woman was preparing to give birth to twins and the doll was gifted to her. Sadly, during the delivery, the male twin was stillborn, but the female twin was born healthy and without complications. The woman, her new baby daughter, and the doll went home together. Years later, the mother was killed in a house fire, but the daughter kept the doll, eventually growing up. And years later, as an adult, this woman donated the doll to that antique shop, giving the brief backstory and quickly leaving. She never returned. The women were puzzled to find the doll was locked in that wooden box. They removed the lock so that customers could at least look at it, but both felt a bad energy from the doll. Stephen asked if anything strange had happened since the doll was dropped off, but the women wouldn't confirm or deny. Uh-oh. Stephen, who was very interested in the paranormal, found the story interesting and said they still wanted to buy it. The women seemed creeped out, but also relieved that the doll was off their hands. As they were leaving, one woman told Stephen, "Be careful." Stephen said he didn't know what she meant by this at the time, saying he always thought the idea of a haunted object or doll was just a little too far-fetched to believe. So he didn't understand the woman's warning. But he would soon find out what she meant. Stephen and Christina brought the doll back to their house, placing him up on a shelf alongside many of their other dolls and artifacts. Later that night, Stephen began researching more about the doll itself and found that it was originally called Maddie, and it acted as a mascot in the early 1960s for the Mattel Toy Corporation. But the couple wanted to name it something different and began referring to it as Norman. Stephen saying they picked the name because the doll was just so strange. It was nor man, nor doll. A few nights later, it began. Everyone was asleep when at 4 a.m, there was a loud pounding at their front door. Very intense knocking. The couple wondered who on earth would be at their front door at this hour. Stephen got up, and as he walked over towards the stairs, the knocking abruptly stopped. And from the window, he saw there was no one on the front porch. To be sure, he walked over and opened up the door to find no one. Not a soul in sight. Stephen and Christina were newer to this neighborhood and felt creeped out by this. So the next day, Stephen set up surveillance cameras around their home. The couple said they had one particular neighbor that seemed to be in trouble with the law quite often. So they just wanted peace of mind. He set up one camera on the front porch and numerous others throughout the house, feeling like if anyone was trying to break in, they would be able to catch them. A few days later, Christina's 15-year-old daughter, Stephen's stepdaughter, ran downstairs to tell her parents that when she was in the shower in her bathroom, something happened. She told them at first she heard what sounded like the doorknob to her bathroom door turning. Then she saw a dark figure walk past her shower door. Thinking her mom may have come in to get something, she opened up the shower door, but there was no one there. Hannah took off screaming and was shaken up. Christine and Stephen had been downstairs all afternoon, so they said it wasn't either of them. If she had been upstairs alone, who did she see? And after the incident with the front door, Stephen checked the entire house, but there were no signs of a break-in, and Hannah was sure of what she saw, a tall male figure in her bathroom. Out of privacy for Hannah, there were no surveillance cameras set up in her room or bathroom, so they couldn't check that. And later that night, another incident. Hannah was asleep in her bedroom, Stephen and Christina asleep in theirs. When Hannah said she woke up to the feeling of someone or something tugging on her blanket, it started out light, just tugging. Then it became a more violent yanking. Then she looked down to see indentions on her bed, as if something was crawling up towards her. And again, she screamed. Stephen and Christina come running, and again, there's no surveillance of Hannah's room, but she was adamant this was no dream. At this point, Stephen said he had no reason to think of the doll really, still believing there was a rational explanation. A few days after this, Stephen's grandchildren came to spend the day at their house. When they got there, the kids saw Norman on the shelf and asked about him. It was very typical for them to take interest, and they liked to play with all of Stephen and Christina's toys and dolls. And Norman, being new, the kids took a particular interest in him. Stephen's grandson asked if Norman could come watch TV with them, and Stephen said, sure. So the three of them went into the other room, Stephen working on his computer with his back away from the bed, as the grandkids sat watching TV and playing on their portable gaming systems. Norman sat propped up on the bed. Stephen said he sat typing away when suddenly his granddaughter screamed, saying the doll had moved on its own. Stephen didn't really believe that, but said, "Hey, I have the surveillance. Let me check the footage." Later that afternoon, he played it back, and he saw something otherworldly. He watched as Norman the doll is seen moving its head to look at the back of Stephen, then slowly turning his head back. Then the doll does something really strange. It looks down. Stephen claims this footage is very real. After showing the surveillance to Christina, the couple came to the conclusion that they had a haunted doll. Stephen, who enjoys paranormal investigations, has kept the doll from 2016 to present day and documented the activity, saying, "Over the years, strange occurrences have continued. He eventually locked Norman in his own room at his house," going on to say that their house became infested with spiders at one point and rats at another time. And Stephen believes this is somehow connected to the darkness of the doll. It was later revealed that Hannah, Christina's daughter, was supposed to be a twin, but Christina said her male twin was stillborn at birth, just like the origin story of the doll. Stephen went on to release a book called Norman, The Doll That Needed to Be Locked Away, which was about the family's paranormal experiences with the doll. And in 2019, the Travel Channel show A Haunting covered this case. All I gotta say is these folks kept these dolls a lot longer than I would. I actually don't think I would have taken either of them home because as I've gotten older, dolls just sort of creep me out because of stories like the ones we have discussed today. But hey, that's just me. But it's widely believed that some items can truly be cursed, haunted, just like other items can be blessed. I think one of the most obvious questions many people have is, hey, if an object is haunted or demonic, why don't you just destroy it, burn it, take it and get rid of it? Many don't, including the Warrens, because it's believed that destroying a haunted object like Annabelle or Norman could potentially release the spirit or negative energy associated with it into the world, causing even more problems. Another reason why the Warrens kept Annabelle is simply because they believed it to be proof, evidence, of the existence of malevolent spirits and demons. Same with Stephen. He believes the doll is truly haunted and enjoys studying the supernatural. The Warrens said they chose to keep and lock up Annabelle to study and show the reality of paranormal activity. But I gotta know, what are your thoughts on haunted objects? Have you ever purchased, inherited, or been gifted something that you felt could be haunted? Whether it be a doll or something else entirely. If so, I'd love to hear about it. Drop them in the comments and be sure to let me know what places and cases you'd like to see on the show. Until next episode, I'm Avery Ross, and this is Avery After Dark.